Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
Welcome to the end of the weekend.
Please don't let today be Monday. Please don't let today be Monday. Please, 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 please don't let today be Monday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
And then what followed was bad, even by Monday standards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome into Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Hope you're having a good Sunday morning. Good halfway point of the weekend. Although I'm really not sure if Sunday feels like the halfway point of the weekend. I feel like 2 o'clock on Saturday sort of feels like the halfway point of the weekend. Like that's the sweet spot. Maybe even Saturday night. Sunday feels like the ramp back up into a week. We'll continue breaking down the intricacies of how weekend days how each day actually feels as we go through it. Also, we're gonna power rank the days. I've decided that now. Beards, prepare your power rank. I gotta get my yellow legal pad. We're gonna power rank days, not for all 3 hours of today's show, but at some point. I'm Joshua Briscoe, Beards McFly, hitting the buttons on the other side of the glass. It's Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810, and the Royals did the thing again. I mean, it's kind of a different thing. Like, I guess the thing that the Royals have done this year is lose games by one run, which didn't happen yesterday. I guess you could consider that just a different type of loss, although it wasn't unforeseen, certainly. This is, you know, a blowout loss here and there, not stunning. The way that yesterday went, though, was really frustrating. Like, it was just a deep-seated bummer of a game. And look, they're 3-6. Every game matters more than in a full season. That point has been beaten into the ground. Like, I'm just doing the most obvious take ever here. But this is still at a point where a good stretch very soon continues the idea that the Royals might just be able to at least stay interesting into a conversation with expanded playoffs, etc. As of this exact moment, though, doesn't feel great. Here's what happened yesterday. Yesterday, I was here from 4 to 6. We did a two-hour special Boulevard Baseball Tonight show. 2 hours. Double-stuffed Oreo baseball pregame show. And I got out of here pretty quickly after the show. That I like to get home and watch this game as much as I can, so I know what I'm talking about for tomorrow. So I do ultimately get home. I kind of just, you know, unpack some of my stuff a little bit and then settle in. Hadn't checked the game yet. Figured I'm gonna miss the first inning or whatever, and I'd like to at least see the second inning of Bolaños. And figured that would be sort of the continued beginning of his day. Whenever I got home, I can't remember if it was already. But here, whenever I got home, Kevin McCarthy was pitching, and I went, "Yikes! Uh-oh, this isn't good. Something terrible has happened here," and the Royals were down 5-0, like, immediately. Four of those runs came in the first inning, and ultimately the Royals did end up scoring 5, so this wasn't true, but by the time I got home, it felt like the game was over. And I'm not telling you that every good baseball team should be able to dig their way out of a 4-0 first inning hole. But it at least shouldn't feel quite so hopeless. And that's just kind of where the Royals offense is at right now. It just feels, it feels Sisyphusian to just be pushing the rock up the hill forever and ever and ever and ever. And the planets never fully align quite right. I'm not mixing metaphors. But that feels like where we're at with the Royals. And they're just, it's game after game where you see the inning end with the bases loaded. That happened twice yesterday. Whenever you do have the kind of starting pitching performance where you're down by five before you know it. And Glenn Sparkman wasn't very good. But other than that, Kyle Zimmer looked great. That's the winner story out of the game yesterday. Zimmer went three innings, his longest stretch as a Royal. He looked great. Very encouraging just to see that length from him and having him just in the game for that long, confidently. Excellent. But the Royals left 12 guys on base, and they just keep doing that. It's either Franco or Nicky Lopez. It just doesn't matter. Innings keep ending with the bases loaded, with the guy on third, with a hot start and a wasted finish. And yesterday, the White Sox left 15 on base. But a box score so lopsided in terms of runs actually scored, it was the White Sox had 21 hits, and that's too many. But the Royals had 15. They were getting on base. They also had four errors yesterday. The Royals were giving free runners and not bringing in any of their own. There were several times, and again, it ultimately got out of hand, especially in the ninth. But they went even into the ninth with, like, a chance. It was 7-4. You could at least string together the idea of some hope there. But I really didn't have any, because what always seems to happen is even whenever you do get some guys on base, it's never cleaned up. It's never maximized upon. And it's a super small sample size. I'm not trying to be negative. It just comes naturally, I guess. Whenever you watch the Royals for this full game, and I was sitting there last night, like, I missed the first, like, inning and a half, which was five White Sox runs and Ronald Bolaños' entire start. But I stuck with the rest of the entire game, just praying, please give me something. And I guess it's Zimmer. But give me something to continue watching this game for. And there just wasn't anything other than, I guess, there wasn't anything offensively. Witt homer is nice. It felt like far less than enough even then. They hadn't scored yet up to that point. Actually, they might have gotten one in the sixth already. I can't remember. They scored three in the sixth total. But I don't know, man. I tweeted last night, like, that Fox Sports KC should just give us a feed where we can watch the pitching and then just play, like, cat videos. Or someone said, like, or just go cutout to cutout in the stands and just tell us who each person is. Show us the pitching and then splice in a 30-for-30 about Marlins man. Like, I'll take anything. Give us the pitching, and then in the other half of the inning, just constantly work your way through the entirety of the Chiefs-Patriots AFC Championship game. That's in the past. That can't hurt me anymore. I would rather watch that again. And there are these bright spots, right? We talked about some of this yesterday, and we talked about it also with Clint Scholes. We'll hear from him here in about 50 minutes. We'll play back a chunk of that conversation at 10, because I just thought it was really interesting and insightful about a bunch of the guys that have made their way up, and then guys we're still not really talking about from the system a little bit. We'll talk to Max Reaper of Royals Review at 11. Darren Smith will be in at 11:45 ahead of the ship. But There are plenty of places to be feeling optimistic. I figured that would be the energy coming into today's show, just maybe out of hope. But like yesterday, we talked a ton about Chris Bubich. Maybe we should just continue talking about him today. I'd love to add Ronald Bolaños to the list of guys I could feel anything positive for. But that's not earned yet. So I guess our energy throughout this season is just going to be get a young pitcher, talk about that for 3 days, get another young pitcher, talk about him for 2 days, get the first one again. This whole season might just be waiting for Bubich, waiting for Brady Singer. We're getting Jake Junis today. That's a positive. He's back. Brad Keller threw yesterday at Kauffman, said he felt good. Matheny said he looked fantastic yesterday. We might even play you some audio. They both talked yesterday as well that can kind of put them into context. But I'm just frustrated by the fact that even coming into this shortened season, like, this was supposed to feel better. And they don't have Dozier back yet, and so that's part of it. But even yesterday, like, they went Merrifield, Soler, Perez, McBroom, Franco, Mondesi, O'Hearn, Starling, Lopez. That feels like a major league lineup with some issues towards the bottom of it. That counts for something. And it never seems opportunistic. And I know that's super vague. I know that's not an actionable thing, and maybe that's just a sample size thing where at the end of the conversation about clutch or being opportunistic or whatever, maybe it all comes out in the wash of a larger sample size. But we don't have that right now. And to this point, I don't have a fix for that. I'm just frustrated by it. I imagine most Royals fans are. Again, the good news is the rotation is going to get smoothed out here. Whenever we talked to Lesky yesterday, we were talking about Junis and Keller. And I think he said this about Keller coming back. He said he thought Bolaños could get sent to the pen. Or he said he might even get optioned to bring back Keller. And I thought that seemed like I was surprised by that before the game yesterday. Now, not so much. I think that makes a lot of sense at this point because it hasn't looked good for Bolaños. But the rotation, once it stabilizes a little bit, where there's no reason, Bubich isn't going anywhere. Singer's not going anywhere. Duffy's looked pretty good. And a lot of his issues over the last few years have been he loses velocity as the season goes on, which makes sense. But he won't have to go through that this year because there's not a 162 game season to go through. He's playing like almost a third, over a little bit over. Of a season, if he stays healthy and gets over a third of his regular starts, we might never see that drop off. That would be great. So you give me Junis, Duffy, Singer. I don't know if Keller's going to be ready for this, but Keller, Bubich, you give me that rotation. I feel pretty good about that on a night to night basis. It's at least interesting. Like, and Junis this afternoon is going to be really interesting because we need to figure out what exactly he is. What exactly is he going to be able to provide short-term, long-term? When does he end up in the bullpen? I'm the least optimistic about him from the guys in this rotation that I'm hopeful of seeing. Being Duffy, Singer, Keller, Bubich, and then Junis. Probably not even in that order because we've seen Duffy before, but definitely not in that order, because Singer would be one at this point. But even going back to Friday, and this is something we talked about a lot with Leske, that if you want to hear, it's up on the additional programming page on the A10 mobile app and A10WHB.com. We talked about it a little bit with Clint also. Bubich is like a tinkerer. Like he's always using the technology and the analytics and everything to try to not only just like fine tune his game but add stuff. Like Leske said that he thinks Bubich might have the highest ceiling out of these pitching prospects that we've been talking about for the last 2 years with the Royals. Now he also said that any of them could be the best out of that group, and it would not be super surprising, which I think speaks to understanding how high that ceiling is. I think it speaks to how dynamic all those guys are, and some of them are going to fizzle out. Somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to underperform. Someone's going to be great. Someone's going to be average, whatever. But there is such an incredible number of genuine talents in this rotation down the system right now. It's incredible. They're not just throwing a bunch of numbers at it. They're throwing quality numbers at it. That was the crux of our conversation with Leske. And so I am no less excited about Chris Bubich because I'm expecting him to look a little bit different next time out. Not even dealing with the fact that he was like clearly like amped yesterday or 2 days ago. He had some command issues, and he was up in the zone a bunch. He let a changeup hang. I get it. But seeing him evolve over the rest of the season is going to be fascinating. I just can't deal with a significant number of further starter gives up four in the first, offense never catches up type of games. That's what, at this point, I just don't. That's why a 162 game season is impossible for me to stay totally locked into over the long haul. Give me 60 games where 50 of them are interesting. That's great. I'm here for that. The clock is ticking on blowouts that are never close, and the only two that have been that way for the Royals this year were both started by Bolaños. So, not a great sign. I'm not like willing to light his options on fire for the record, but he started the third game of the year, 9-2. He started yesterday, 11-5. It's not what you want from your starter. But he's a, you know, I was going to say at least Franchi Cordero has been good, but he's also not getting quite as much time as I would like, but we'll figure it out. Again, I do think that this is my consistent thing that I'm kind of stoked for is, now this yesterday wasn't super duper relevant because it was out of control so early, but this was an unplanned bullpen day and they were playing from behind all game. But I am still very much here for Mike Matheny, breaker of bullpens and breaker of individual inning rules and roles, because that is maximizing what you do have, even whenever you don't have a full pin of dominators. The bullpen's been very good this year, and it's been used well. Like, I think that needs to be tied in together. So that's still encouraging for the long haul. I just sort of want to take last night's game, crumple it up, throw it away, and then move on to the next one. Or talk about ones that were more interesting from earlier this week. So we'll probably do that whenever we come back here on Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
The attempted illusion that the Royals would create that, oh, this is a team that can contend. Hey, we're raised royal and forever royal and taking the crown. This year's just going to be like, don't strain your butt.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Mm-hmm. I might just sit here in silence for 3 minutes and just let the entirety of center field play. It would be bad for the podcast listeners.
It would be terrible for the podcast.
You could just cut it out. For the podcast, here's what's happening right now. Center field is playing. You hear it now. Even if you weren't listening live, you heard it live. You can hear it. You can hear it playing in the background. This is Beards' way of telling me that I've talked too much baseball for the day. I'm just surprised it didn't start with the first time I said, like, Royals. This, if you're not a
not everybody's inundated.
Say again?
Not everybody's inundated on the way things work here.
Yeah, so what I'll explain is you're eventually going to hear the startlingly loud crack of a bat. And it's...
I don't know what you're talking about.
So this is the thing that... The reason that I, whenever center field starts playing, that I immediately become like a nervous bird is that at some point in this song, there is... I think it's coming. Is this it? Oh, it's the worst! Because I don't know where the crack of the bat in this song is, but Beards knows it by feel. He knows it by heart. And so he'll just pot it up the music incredibly loudly for the moment that the crack of the bat happens. And I don't ever remember where it is, but he has it timed out perfectly. I do know that it's late enough in the song. Is it after three? Is this the third time through the chorus? I know it's late enough in the song that I always prepare for it and then get phased out again because I have to either explain the thing or move on. Because I can't just sit and listen and like wait for it to happen for 3 minutes. Because there's a radio audience listening live right now. If it was at the beginning of it, I would just get it out of the way. And then even explaining it doesn't take as long as it takes to get to the damn crack of the bat. And so I eventually get to like, all right, well, I'm just going to pretend it's not happening. And we'll just talk about Jake Junis starting tonight. But then I get a sentence into Jake Junis starting tonight. And it sneaks in there somewhere and it totally derails everything. Where is it? It's like, how long is this song? Okay, that's fine. So this happens every time. I guess we can just talk about Chris Bubich until I eventually get completely knocked off my spot. And I'm trying not to look at Beards because he's so pleased with himself. There it is! We're free. God. How long into the song is that?
Like...
I'll forget. Just tell me.
It's like 2.5 minutes or so.
It feels like an hour and a half. It feels like the ship
is
coming up next.
Torture.
It's the worst. I also still don't know if it's a good song or not.
It's decent. It's catchy.
If it's even like a good baseball song. I'm sorry. I have to explain a tweet. Is this supposed to be... So I just saw a tweet from the Seattle Mariners. That's the first time I've ever seen said that sentence on the radio before. And Sam Hayes, that Wichita Chief Sam on Twitter, does great work with a bunch of Chief stuff. But he just quote tweeted this tweet from the Mariners. And it says, A's fans, baseball's true memers. But I'm looking at the graphic now. And no one is saying any of this. So I'm not sure if this was on purpose or not. But the graphic has the A's logo and their stat line for the night. And the Mariners logo on their stat line for the night. And then it's paired with a picture of a Mariner who I cannot identify because he is running and his head is turned away from the camera. And with the logos structured that way, it 100% just says ass. It's the A of athletics and the apostrophe S and then the Mariners S. And the way that this picture is the Marlins player's butt is like the featured image in the video, in the image here. That has to be on purpose, right? Have you seen the tweet yet, Beards?
I have not. Let me look it up.
At Mariners on Twitter. I can just show you the image. I don't think I would have thought anything if I didn't see Sam tweet it. I'm holding it up for Beards now. You can see it on the Mariners Twitter account from yesterday.
Okay, hold on. Let me pull it up.
You can't see it from
I want to, like, actually look at it on my screen.
Okay, that's fine. Beards got a new laptop, and he's trying to see every pixel of everything now.
I could do that.
The screen looks excellent. I'm trying to figure out if I saw that this was if I just saw this image and assumed it was a joke, or if this is very much what they were going for.
Oh, no wonder I can't find it. This is the Mariners PR account.
Not helpful. At Mariners on Twitter. By the time you find this, we could have played center field another full time. It lets everyone play along at home.
Okay.
What's your judge on this? Was this on purpose? Again, Sam tweets it and mentions that it's something that they're the meme lords or whatever. And the photo is bizarre. It's a bizarre photo choice if it's not for a joke. But none of the mentions are talking about it.
Right, that's what I was looking at too.
So is this just me, or do we think the Mariners snuck one by everybody? Because what Sam is saying, if you go through the mentions, you're going to see a bunch of A's fans with very good memes. They're all very... enough Gen Zers are watching baseball that you get deep-fried memes, which is very good. But did the Mariners do this on purpose? This is the question. Should I reach out for a statement?
I think it's an excellent coincidence.
Why would you use that picture, though? I can't even tell who the player is because his face is facing the other direction.
It's a generic stock photo.
Maybe. But why wouldn't you use a generic stock photo of someone with their face in the photo? This was an underwhelming development. Anyway. I told you I wanted to crumple up yesterday's Royals game and throw it in the garbage and then move on. The last acknowledgement we're going to do of it, at least until we talk to Max at 11, is Mike Matheny. He had his regular post-game press conference from last night, and he did his best. He stayed optimistic? Maybe. It's not terribly long. Let's hear Mike Matheny, his post-game press conference from last night.
Mike, you want to start with Bolaños, just your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I thought obviously didn't have a good feel for even a sinker. When you see that good of an arm and bouncing some of the fastballs, that's usually Simon rushing a little bit. But, he came out with a game plan, tried to use all of his weapons. The guy's got such good stuff. You wonder sometimes if it's too many things he's trying to master instead of take advantage of a couple of things that he can do. You know, he's got a big arm, got the ability to throw a swing and miss slider, but tried to mix in the curve and changeup, just never really got into a rhythm. And almost had too much movement at times where he was trying to get it on the plate and the bottom was falling out from under it. And then he got into bad counts and, just a shame we couldn't get ahead.
Defensively, not really the type of game you're looking for.
No, we can't be a four-error team. That's all there is to it. We know that. And a couple of the plays seem the same as we're coming in to the ball. We're having a little bit of trouble on that. A couple bad decisions, trying to be aggressive there. Maybe from the pitcher's mound on a play that doesn't even need to be thrown. Probably could have ate that and got out at the plate. Just a few mistakes, and it seems like every time we have those, they're biting us. What's crazy is, we had a chance a number of times there where we had an opportunity to make something happen, and especially the second and the fourth, and couldn't capitalize on that. Now they had chances too. I mean, give up 21 hits, you give up four errors, things aren't going to go well. But we got within three, which was pretty amazing considering everything else that was going on.
Sparkman got nicked a little bit in the ninth there, but before him, McCarthy, Newberry, Zim, those guys really did a heck of a job to keep you close.
Yeah, yeah. Playing, you know, Matt came in, got in trouble, bases loaded, nobody out, and worked his way out of that. It was a great job. Newberry got into trouble, same thing, worked his way out. You're really using that slider well, and the fastball still coming out of his hand. And I thought Zimmer did a fantastic job. We needed that so bad for our pen tonight. For someone to go out and eat up those three innings, and Kyle continues to make just great improvements on all this stuff.
Hey, Mike, I was just wondering what the thought process was. You guys had Zimmer up and then ended up going with McCarthy and coming back to Zimmer later?
Yeah, just trying to get out of an inning. McCarthy's done a whole lot more than that. We know we're probably going to go to Zimmer. Trying to give him enough time because he's been accustomed to having a little more time than a quick up and then in. Hasn't been in really yet with anybody on base, so McCarthy's a guy to kind of get us out of an inning. But the way that first one was even going, we were wondering if we were going to need somebody to eat up a lot of innings right from the get-go instead of just to get us out of the inning kind of guy. So kind of resting on guys like McCarthy and Newberry to be able to get us out of jams.
Mike, to see O'Hearn, three hits, I think he drove in two. I know, obviously, you want to win the game. But what can you say about what you saw from him, I think, against lefties too tonight?
Yeah, it was against lefties, which he just kept a very simple approach. Didn't try to do too much, used the other field, got the ball elevated to where he could get pull side. Thought he did a real nice job not trying to get too big. And he's going to add in time to where he's going to get into compromised counts against the pitchers, and then he's going to let it eat. But I thought he did a nice job today.
That's Mike Matheny, his post-game press conference from last night after the game. A couple of things. The last topic there is at least something else that if you wanted to find something good about last night, you heard Alec Lewis ask about Ryan O'Hearn. Not only did he have the three hits like you heard them talk about there, it was all against lefties. That has been like one of the major storylines with O'Hearn is like, well, what will we see him ultimately do against lefties? Three hits off of left-handers last night. That's something to be excited about. And I mentioned this in the first segment a little bit, but four errors is ridiculous. Like Matheny says, we can't be a four-error team. There aren't a lot of teams who can. If you are absolutely mashing it, then maybe, but that's a rough... You know what? I'm curious what the all-time... Beards, can you please try to find the all-time record for most errors in a season? We can do some dividing and find a per-game basis on that.
Are you wanting by team or for a player?
For a team. Most errors in a season by a team is what I would like. Because an ideally more modern era, but I if you end up finding something about the, 1814 Chesapeake Beatles... That feels like an old-timey baseball team, right? The Chesapeake Beatles. If you told me the Chesapeake Beatles and the Cleveland Spiders had a brutal rivalry, I would believe you. Going bug theme. But the Royals obviously can't beat that team. That's clear. And you have all these games over and over where the bullpen ends up doing a pretty excellent job. You can't put your starters in a bad position, and you can't be wasting these efforts from the pen because you know your offense isn't built to erase big mistakes like that. It's also a lineup of guys. I mean, like last night, Soler was in right field. So, but I'm moving him away from this. He also was not a part of the problem, but. Like last night, Merrifield, Mondesi, O'Hearn, and then Newberry had one that he just shouldn't have thrown the ball. But Merrifield, Mondesi, and O'Hearn should not be giving you three errors. Those aren't guys you expect that from at all. And we've seen some legit issues from Mondesi just all across the board this year. Do you have a result, Beards?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is from like 3 years ago.
Okay, what year? Do you have the year?
1886.
Okay.
Washington committed 867 errors in 122 games.
I'm sorry, how many?
867.
Who did that?
Washington.
Is there a team name?
No,
who was Washington in 1886, you said?
Yes. If you went after 1900, then 425 by Detroit in 1901.
Okay, I need that number again. 1901, how many?
425.
So it feels like 867 is an outlier. Is there a modern one? What's...
I'm trying to find a modern one, and I haven't found one yet.
Okay, that's good. So in 1886, they were the Nationals.
Oh, here's a good stat. According to baseballreference.com, since 2000, the leagues with 30 teams have never recorded more than 3,500 errors. Between 1901 and 1917, the league with only 16 teams never recorded less than 3,500 errors.
Wow. What was the year cutoff there again?
2000 modern era, and then 1901 to 1917.
So that was just a really clumsy year, a clumsy decade and change of baseball.
Yes.
I mean, their glove didn't have webbing yet. It definitely got harder. If a team has that many errors, do you ever, like, reconsider the definition of an error? I'm going to try to find out more about the 1886 Washington baseball team. And I need you to find me the most error-filled team in modern baseball history.
I'm trying to find one. The most ever by a player is tied between Billy Schindel.
Whoa!
And Herman Long. They had 122 each.
Holy Schindel, beards, be careful.
That was in the 1800s.
How many each?
122 errors.
Not good.
In one season.
Not good. This is excellent. So the 1886 Washington Nationals, who apparently had 867 errors in that season. Their baseball reference page is incredible. And also the fact that they have a baseball reference page reminds you that baseball reference is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have photos of this team, and it's fantastic. I need to find out, like, who was the most sort of hard-handed of these guys here? Who really racked up the errors? I'll have to figure that out. But they were of course led by let's check out here. Let's just rank them by hits. Paul, who could forget Paul Hines? He had 152 hits that year. Cliff Carroll, another outfielder, just absolutely raking the ball. Barney Gilligan. That's the catcher, of course. There are some excellent names and images on this page. They went 28-92.
That's not that good.
They almost lost 100 games in a 120-game season. So they ended up with 867 errors in 120 games. Is that good? It seems bad. They played at Swampoodle Grounds.
Swampoodle?
Swampoodle Grounds. Uh-huh. It sounds like a dog crossbreed, but is apparently true.
Baseball lasts too long. I can't find anything for freaking modern record of errors.
Just because everything is from the 1800s?
Yeah.
Here we go. And this season, Jimmy Knowles. I don't know what position he played yet. I'm going to figure it out. Jimmy Knowles had 81 errors for this team. Although, hold on. Now, Beards, I don't know. I don't want to have to cite your sources here. But this says they had 485 errors this season. Where did 867 come from?
Hang on.
Jimmy Knowles is all over that infield. How many career errors did Jimmy Knowles have? What a weird show we're doing today. We're talking about sports. Pew, 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 pew. Player value fielding. Let's see, how was he as a fielder? Let's see if we can get some advanced stats on Jimmy Knowles. 206 errors in 5 seasons. Not great. Moved around a little bit. Need to find Jimmy Knowles' war. Let's take a break. Whenever we come back, we're going to find the modern record of errors in history. I don't know how this is where we ended up, but it's where we ended up here on Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
They've been corking the bats and coking the hitters. Hello.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I have some weirdly smart-looking math on my legal pad now that I just took the thing where they've never had more than 3,500 errors in a season and just used that as like the most error-filled season average and then divided that by 162 and then divided that by 30 also. But none of that really, like, that just sort of gave me an average number of errors per team per game, which is 0.72 errors per game per team. But that's not really helpful. Because if the end result of this is just the Royals have had too many errors this year, you should, like, thanks for listening to this very cool radio show for the last 15 minutes. What the point is, the Royals have too many errors right now. So not as earth-shattering as I would like for it to be. Mondesi has three already. They're worse than the American League in errors. They have 11 errors in nine games, which is bad, statistically speaking. Anyway, we'll talk about some of the more exciting stuff going on around the Royals here in about 10 minutes or so. We'll bring in Clint Scholes, talk to him yesterday. If you missed it, it's very much worth your time. If you're interested in the Royals, and if you're not interested in the Royals, you haven't been listening for the last 50 minutes of this. So I'm at least honest. Buffalo GM Brandon Bean says that cornerback EJ Gaines has opted out. At this point, maybe bigger in name recognition. Is that because he's had some injury issues and whatnot? But still, there's another name to add on there. This is a really small thing that I mentioned for like 2 minutes on NFL Live on the Friday, but I just haven't had a chance to talk about it since then. I'm going to just admit something football related. I don't want Antonio Brown to sign with the Ravens. Like, no matter what, the Chiefs are definitely not playing Antonio Brown in week 3. He'll be suspended for the first 8 games of the season if he signs with someone. So the Chiefs are safe in that regard. And I know that I've said this many times over, like, hey, don't let the past hurt you anymore. The Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. No one, barring injury or COVID, no one can change that now. With that being said, I don't want the Ravens to get better. And for as everything as Antonio Brown is, he would make them better.
Would he play?
I mean, if he would sign, it seems like he's having fun with Lamar Jackson. They worked out together. Lamar Jackson said really nice things about him. If he signs there, I think he would. Now, look, has he tweeted about retirement, gotten suspended, and then since his agent has said that he wants to play in 2020? Yes. Is he going to be terribly consistent in terms of what he's looking for? Very unlikely. But if he does want to play again, I can't think of many places that would be more fulfilling for him than Baltimore, where he would be the best receiver on the team, which would be the case for almost any team in football. But he would immediately be their best receiver. He would be on a team that has legit Super Bowl aspirations. And he would be extremely valuable in that offense. And then he would get to play the Steelers twice every year that he was there. I'm sure they'd play in the first 8 weeks. They probably wouldn't play them twice this year. But so as much as I will continue to point out that if you are a Chiefs fan or that I as a Chiefs fan would tell you, we should not be worrying about other teams in the way that we used to. You don't rooting for the Patriots to mess up or to fail in some regard was sort of like our MO for a long time, because it was always sort of like, you know, the Chiefs are contenders if they can get past the Patriots. Even for a while, you know, it was, well, if they could just, even like not really in contender mode, but just like, you know what, they're in that next tier teams. Maybe something crazy happens. Something crazy never happens. Like it almost never. But it was, well, you know, if they can get past Peyton Manning, if they can get past the Steelers, if they can get past the Patriots. Now the Chiefs are that team. Like the Chiefs are the team that everyone else is sort of putting their target on and saying, well, maybe we will be able to win the AFC if the Chiefs stumble, if Mahomes gets hurt again or whatever, something like that. Even for the Ravens, that's the case. Just like it was the case for the Colts of Peyton Manning, because they say, well, they got to get past Tom Brady. The Chiefs are in the Patriots sort of, is the phrase catbird seat? Beards, look that up also, please.
What about catbird?
So they're in the catbird seat. I'm looking it up also. I'm pretty sure I've heard the phrase catbird seat.
It's a restaurant.
Well, I'm trying to find, I'd like to find the origin. What does that mean?
An enviable position.
Well, I know that. Yeah. So the catbird seat is correct. The catbird seat is an American English idiomatic phrase. Idiomatic is a great word. An American English idiomatic phrase used to describe an enviable position, often in terms of having the upper hand or greater advantage in any type of dealing among parties. The phrase derives from the common catbird's habit. It's a bird, not a cat. I know it's confusing. If it was a bird cat, that would be terrifying.
Oh, gosh.
The common catbird's habit of making mocking calls from a secluded perch. Look at that. I love whenever we just find the origins of idioms. I feel like it's one of our best recurring bits that we still don't have imaging for, I think. Do we get Curtis to voice something for that and then it's just we just let it die?
I don't think so. Mm. We've got a bunch of stuff that we haven't used, but I don't think that's one of them.
Why would you name a bird the catbird? Why do we have catfish?
Just to confuse people.
We have catfish
because
and catbirds.
Because they're delicious, Josh. That's why.
Just like cats. What are you saying? Because they're called catfish because they're delicious? That's the dumbest thing you've ever said. What is that? What do you mean? No, explain yourself. Turn your microphone back on.
It just popped in my head.
Why are they called chickens? Well, because they're delicious. Chicken doesn't sound delicious.
It does to me.
Now it does, because you've been Pavlovianly biased. It's not called catfish because it's delicious. It's also not delicious because it's called catfish. I'm also confident that if you gave me catfish, catbird, and cat, I could tell them all apart, both visually and by taste. I like cooked, not just like licking each of them, which would also be a dramatically different
experience.
I mean, experience.
That would be easy. Which one's furry?
It would be. All right, feathers, fur, slime? Gross. All right, we're going back to baseball whenever we come back here on Sports Sunday. Clint Scholes of Royals Academy is next.